Making the Best of It. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 212.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Art of Bombing podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bublitz Jr., because this is my podcast. Today we have a great episode. Today I am joined by Eric Escobar, a fantastic comedian based out of Los Angeles, California. He was in the Twin Cities for a show, and I went over to his hotel room and recorded this. So if the sound is a little off, that's why. We weren't in the studio. We were in his hotel room, because that worked out better for him, because he didn't have a vehicle to get around. So it's a great episode, and that's what's coming up. But before we get to that, I got to handle my housekeeping. Got to take care of the business that I have. So far, the Dan on the Run comedy tour has been fantastic. Just got done with shows in Hartford, South Dakota, Watertown, South Dakota. Both shows were great. Both shows had a bunch of people, and it was fantastic. But now, this weekend, I'm going to be back out on the road. I'm going to be on Friday, July 23rd. I will be in Keystone, South Dakota at Boss's Burgers and Cheesesteaks. Then, on July 24th, I will be in Aberdeen, South Dakota at Red Rooster Coffee House. And finally, on Sunday, July 25th, I will be in Grand Forks, North Dakota at Brick and Barley Bar and Grill. So all the information for those shows are on my website, danbublitz.com. If you live in that area, come say hi. Come to one of the shows. If you know somebody in that area, tell them to come to one of them shows. It's going to be great. I'm working out the material for my album, and it's coming along. It's coming along. Still got a little bit of work I want to do before I finalize everything, but it is coming along. Another thing I want to mention is I will be doing an electronic press kit workshop on August 7th, 2021 via Zoom. That is building an electronic press kit for your success. If you don't have a press kit or you don't know what that is, this is a good class. It's only $30 to register, so it's cheap, and it only takes about 2 hours to do. And a lot of the people that have taken it, I've got a lot of positive feedback on this, so it's definitely worth your time and money. It's a good investment on your future. You can get tickets for that at blitzedentertainment.com. Again, that is blitzedentertainment.com for tickets to the how to build an EPK for your success. That's the name of the workshop. And of course, you can go to theartofbombingpod.com, sign up for the monthly newsletter. I know we've had a few stragglers this month that have signed up, and they got this month's newsletter that I promised, that has a great article that I wrote about booking your own shows. So if you want that, make sure you sign up for the newsletter. You can do that by visiting artofbombingpod.com. While you're there on the website, you can buy yourself some Art of Bombing swag. These the Art of Bombing comic logo trucker hats are pretty sweet. You can get that on the website. There's also stickers and pins and t-shirts and all kinds of other stuff that you can get while you're there. And of course, while you're there, you can head over to the Submit a Bomb page and submit your own bomb. If you're a performer and you haven't had a chance to be on the show to tell a story, or even if you've been on the show and you've bombed since, you can call the hotline, you know, the Bomb Squad hotline, call that, leave a voice memo and a voice message, and I might play it on an episode. If you write out your bombing story, I might include it in a future newsletter. All kinds of fun things there. And of course, another thing you need to do is, if you're not already, make sure you follow and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Stitcher, you name it. We're pretty much anywhere you get podcasts, you can find the Art of Bombing podcast. And I would appreciate it if you would subscribe and then give us a 5-star rating and a nice review, because it definitely helps. And finally, if you would like to support the show financially, there are two ways you can do that. You can head over to patreon.com/artofbombingpod, sign up for that, or you can just give us a one-time tip. If you like what I'm doing, you can go over to buymeacoffee.com/debubcomedy and throw a $5 tip for me to buy a coffee, if you like what we're doing. But again, the best way that you can help the show is to help by telling somebody about it. If you see a social media post about the Art of Bombing podcast, share it. That helps us the most. Tag a friend that you think should listen to the podcast. Invite people to like the Facebook page. Invite people to follow us on Twitter, so on and so forth. You know, do the things. Those are the things that help us the most. All right, that's enough of the housekeeping. Let's get into this conversation, this great conversation that I had with my good friend, Eric Escobar. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
But I just moved back from Northern California. I was living in the Redwood Forest. Fun fact, very hard to bring girls home when you live in the forest. All right, guys? They're always like, this is really creepy, and get me out of your trunk. Yeah. And it's tough. I got a horrible roommate, though. Like, clap it up if you've ever had a horrible roommate. Make some noise. You guys, great. Heads up, if you're quiet right now, you were the horrible roommate. All right, we're going to marry into your dishes. All right, friends. Now, I got the worst roommate right now. She's really, like, loud and annoying, and my mom. And, Mom's cute. She's an adorable little Filipino woman. She has a really thick accent. Just recently, she was like, yo, Eric, do you want to see the ocean? Do you want to go surfing? Do you want to go see the beach? What did you say, Mom? Do you want to see the beach? No, I don't want to see Grandma right now. Got off my back. I got a nod. Well done, sir. Yeah, my mom's Filipino, dad's Mexican. Fun being Mexipino, you know? They even each other out. Some half Filipino, 26 years old, already bald. All right? It's horrible, absolutely horrible, but it evens out because it's a half Mexican. By the time I was 5, I could grow a mustache.
Happy to be on the Art of Acapella. This is going to be a great, wonderful episode. Only singing.
Yeah, there we go. It's just going to be you singing, and I'm just going to be, oh, hmm. Huh.
Have you, oh man, I'm already going to start off with a flex. Have you heard of I Can See Your Voice? Are you familiar with that TV show?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy because I got to be on it. I was on first season. Spoiler alert, one of the bad singers. One of the bad singers. And it was crazy because I want to say it was my first real big TV spot that wasn't, you know, something small. And I was so excited about it and I shared it everywhere. And then I realized, oh, the one thing I'm like really proud of and the one thing I'm really stoked about, I'm horrible in because I'm just singing super badly. And now everyone's like, oh, we saw you on there. And it's never like cool. It's like you're the guy who's horrible at what you do. So yeah, you're gonna hear all the singing today. This is gonna be a horrible podcast, a horrible episode. I will grace you with my horrible voice.
That's like one of the like it's almost like a setback because it's like a TV credit, but it's like not. Like you said, it's a TV credit that makes you look bad, so people are like, "Well, you sing terrible.
Here's my
maybe
credit.
You're not funny.
Don't watch it." Yeah. Who else? What other? Not even comics. What other actors are known for like a weird role? Who else got like pigeonholed into something?
I feel like there's a lot of actors. It happens more, I feel like, to actors than
for
anybody,
sure,
just because they get. They get tight cast, and then they end up just playing that same character over and over again.
You know?
I think kind of an example of that. While I appreciate the stuff that he's done is William
Shatner?
No.
Shakespeare.
Sean William Scott. Yeah, Sean William Scott. That's...
I want to say he was... I want to say American Pie, but he wasn't American
Pie.
Yes,
he was.
He was American Pie.
He was the bully.
American Pie without a paddle. Yep. Anything like bro-y from like the late 90s, early 2000s, Sean William Scott, he was in
it. Yeah, so he kept getting like kind of typecast in a lot of the same stuff, it seems like.
Oh,
but,
man. I'll take
and
the
even
work.
Now, he's still trying to like, I think he's a great actor. And I love a lot of the stuff that he's done, I think is great. But you just notice like he doesn't work as much as he used to because he's trying to get out of that, I feel like, you know, like trying to do other stuff that.
I would love if he wasn't trying to get out of it and a 55-year-old Sean William Scott was still like the bro in college. That's what I want to see. Like, I've been here for 40 years, haven't got my degree yet, but screw you, bro.
I'm having a good time. Yeah.
Let's do shots of insulin. Of insulin.
Yeah, gotta keep the diabetes
no
in check.
No tequila for me. Yeah, it's a high fructose content. Fructose. Where are we? It's early. We're in Minnesota. Dan, how you doing?
I'm great. And it is. Yeah, it is early.
I want to say it's not early, but well, I've been waking up at noon every day. So.
Well, so I'll see then. It's early to in relationship to when you get up. It's early in the day.
I like which, your perspective. You're a great guy.
Which now knowing that you get up at noon, people listening will be like, well, it's definitely not early. It's not even morning.
I remember I was in Vegas recently. I love craps. I'm a craps guy. I try not to gamble too much, but sometimes I'll be sitting on that table with no joke, like $40, and it'll take me to 5 a.m. the evening. You know what I mean? You're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. And it's so wild because you know it's, I wouldn't say a problem, but you know it's crazy when you start seeing people check in. And it's like, oh, you're like walking around with a breakfast burrito and a coffee, and I haven't slept yet. I think you should probably – I'm going to go to the arcade. That's probably a safer call.
That's one of the problems with casinos too, like especially casino resorts.
Yeah, no
like,
clocks.
No clocks. You're just wandering around. Like, I don't know. Have you ever played Pachanga?
Yes, I actually did Pachang. That's what we'll call it from now on. I did it right before the pandemic. And I actually have kind of a crazy story about it, but I want to hear your two cents, what you were going to say.
Well, I was just going to say that's one of them where they put you up at the resort. They give you
gorgeous.
Like a, you know, they treat you well. It's great. But you don't really have a reason to leave.
Yeah.
And like you just for 4 days, you're just wandering around inside this casino, and there's no sense of time. You have no idea what's going on.
Zero.
Like you're just doing stuff. And, you know, all the restaurants are there. You eat there. There's shopping there. There's a great pool. There's bar. Like everything you need is at this resort.
Is it Friday? Is it Saturday? What do you mean I'm not booked this weekend? I thought this was not the weekend.
Oh wait, I'm early.
Yeah, just by a month. So I actually, last time I did Pachanga, I was with an amazing comic. His name is Johnny Beaner. Do you know Johnny Beaner?
The name sounds familiar.
Good dude. Very funny. Super good dude. And he's a big fan of Brian Regan. And we were working the club, but in the theater, I want to say Saturday or Sunday night, Brian Regan was doing his show. So it was so wild. Because, you know, we're having a good weekend. It's fun. It's great. But I guess Johnny writes Brian a note and like gives it to his manager or someone. He's like, can you pass along to Brian? And all it said, something very sweet, was like, hey man, big fan, if we could just, you know, say hi or hang out or anything like that. I grew up watching you. I would love to see you. Brian doesn't write back, ends up coming to one of our shows with his whole crew. And of course there's maybe five other audience members in the crowd. So it's like five audience members and then just like the entourage of Brian Regan sitting in the back. He was super nice. He was super great. And then afterwards, he bought us all drinks. We partied with Brian Regan.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, never in a million years did I think Pachanga was the place where I'm like, this is where I'm going to party with one of my favorite comics.
That's
it was
amazing.
It was so coincidental. It was so fun.
You know, that's something I'm kind of learning about Brian Regan. Like, I hear other stories about that with Brian Regan, where I have a friend who gave him and a feature a ride.
Oh my God.
Like, it just worked out. I don't remember all the details, but he was like working at a club down in, like, I want to say it was Rochester, and they were performing somewhere else, obviously, and I don't know, they needed a ride to the airport. Somehow it worked out that he ended up hanging out with them for a night.
He gets it. You know what I mean?
It was a few years ago, but yeah, that's amazing.
My favorite thing about it is, so they give you a room and I had two beds. So I think I did Friday and then Saturday I told some friends like, hey, if you guys want to come through, I have an extra bed. There's a pool if you guys want to hang out. Like, let's make kind of a fun time. And one of them is this, he's a really funny guy. His name's Logan. And he was more of a green comic in this time, but he loved Brian Regan. He would always tell me the story about how, like, I think for his second grade talent show, he just did Brian Regan's act, like, as like a 10-year-old.
That's funny.
Obsessed with the guy, loves him. And he was there that night. So Brian Regan bought him – he got to talk with Brian. I think Brian Regan was even like, hey, so you're a comedian. You're a comedian. Tell me a joke. And he told him some, like, dirty joke. Because he, like, freaked out. He's like, this is the only joke I can think of right now. And it wasn't like, oh, that's too dirty or too mean. He was like, oh, good job. Keep at it. What a guy.
He's like, not for me, but keep up.
Only say good things about
this
gentleman.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I had not as close of an experience as that, but I will say one time when I was at Pechanga, and this was before the current people who book it, mm-hmm. They were doing like a local showcase down there, and I got booked on it. And I think, if memory serves me right, I think Frank Castillo was hosting it.
Oh,
too, because he still lived in the area.
Hell
and
yeah.
I think he worked at the casino too. But I think he was on it. This
our current rating
show.
Defending roast battle champ.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Bring that back.
Actually, I don't think he's the reigning champ. I think somebody didn't they do another
season? We recorded this 4 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
This was recorded before.
He's still a champ. Like,
He's still a champ.
He's still a roast battle champ.
He may
way.
Not be a Drew McIntyre, but he's a Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast before. But he I think he was on this show too, but we were down doing this like local showcase that they were doing in the comedy club, and there was a decent crowd. I mean, it wasn't huge, but it was an all right crowd. But upstairs in the theater was Gabriel Iglesias' stand up revolution tour.
Oh my
so
lord!
So it wasn't just him; it was like all the people that were on his stand up revolution show and tour. So it was like Sean Latham was there, Dylan Garcia was there, and just like there's a bunch of other guys that I don't remember their names. Were all. Up on the show, and bunch of them came down.
Oh my god!
And jumped on our show and did spots, did guest sets on
that's
the show down
awesome.
There. So, well, of course, the only person who didn't come down and do a guest spot was
Gabriel. Yeah.
but all these people came down and did guest spots. So this little crowd, even though they weren't at the show upstairs, they got like an insane amount of great talent popped into this show.
Jeez Louise. Oh my
And I was
Lord.
Still pretty green at the time, and I had to follow Dylan Garcia, who I don't even know if he still does comedy, but he blew up really quick because of that stand-up revolution, and he was a strong comic. And I got pretty intimidated, and of course I ate crap after that, but
what's...
On the first show. On the second show, I got out of my head, and I was like, I gotta just hold my own here.
What's your perspective on this? Because I feel like I might be in the minority, but I think people agree with me. A lot of people want someone to go on before them who just, like, murders and kills, so the energy's up for you. But I kind of want someone who's, like, maybe just okay, or, like... Like, I would rather, like, raise the bar than have to meet the bar sometimes.
I feel like that's – I think that's not – I don't think you're alone on that. I think it's – because sometimes it gets intimidating. At least for me, it's intimidating. And I'm trying to get over that. Because in comedy, we should be able to follow anybody. That's the
exactly.
idea.
Exactly.
Like,
I want to have a good show. You know what I mean? I want everyone to do well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want the whole show to go good. It isn't about – and that's kind of my mindset now. It's not – it's like – I'm not trying to be part of an okay show, and I'm not trying to be the best person on the show. I'm trying to be a part of a good show. So
Amen.
When people leave, they don't just remember one comic. They're like, wow,
that was
an
a great night.
Show.
That
I
was
remember
a good night.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't even remember names. They just remember everybody was great, and it was a great show. That's
yeah.
what I want to be part of. But back then, I was very easily intimidated. And so I'm
for sure.
Like,
I think for me, there's that perfect balance where it's like, oh, if you crush it and you get a standing ovation and applause breaks galore, I'm excited because they're excited, but I'm going to put in some work tonight. I can't just
I can't just
chill and be like, all right, so I had this setup I was thinking about. Like, no, like I can't just come out with premises. I have to like bring the A stuff. But and it's also the flip side. You don't want someone to bomb before you because then you have to pick up the pieces. But it's like, yo, if I'm bringing a 9 and you're a 8.5, that's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's we're close. We're in close proximity.
You can even be a 9 or a 10. Just don't be 100 because I have 4 poop jokes and
we gotta keep the expectations at a certain level.
Exactly.
Right?
Not the number
low,
1 comic.
Not too high.
Not the number 2.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know because it's interesting too. Like, and I'm sure you know this too now because. With living out, you still live out in LA, right?
I do. Gardena, yeah. California, 310 represent. Hello.
And so you, and I know you work a lot of the clubs out there, so this, you know, runs it, you probably run into this often, where like this wasn't something for me that I would run into a ton, where like you do a showcase and suddenly some big comic jumps in on it. You know what I mean? Like, I had to follow Arsenio Hall one time at the Ice House.
Jeez Louise.
It was like, I come in. To, you know, going into the green room, you got to check in with the host, and the host is like, oh, by the way, Arsenio Hall's coming in, and you're going up after him.
Jeez,
and I'm like,
Louise.
Oh, God. I'm like, how much time is he doing? He's like,
50.
Until he's done.
4 hours. It's going to be a great show. We
can't
have the
second
like
one. And I feel like he did, like, 45 minutes.
Jeez Louise. Like,
and he crushed.
I have a
just crushed.
I have a very similar story, because I was maybe, Dan, I was probably 4 months into comedy, 3 months into comedy. I don't know what I'm doing now. I definitely didn't know what I was doing then. I was very like, what? And I was on my first show as a bringer over at the Comedy Store. Of course, you know, like 20 comics. It was a long show. I wait, you know, maybe an hour, hour and a half, and I'm about to go up. And I'm nervous. Because this is essentially the first real show or club that I'm doing. I'm very nervous. About to go on. They give them the light, and they're like, hey, we're going to have a quick drop-in before you. Well, that's fine. What's a drop-in? You know what I mean? I
didn't know that was. You're like, what does that mean?
And Chris D'Elia came in, and I want to say he did like, probably like 45. He did a good amount of time. Killed. He was great. But it was just so weird because at least if you know someone's doing 5 minutes and you're following them, you're like, all right, in 5 minutes, I'll be ready. But when you have no idea when they're getting off stage, it's you're just anxious the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like I could be up in 2 minutes and just like, Eric, go up there. Or I could be up in an hour and I'll wait here. All right.
Yeah, cool. And that's exactly what I did. I sat in the back of the room at the Ice House watching him crush and destroy the room. Because, you know, that's exactly what you said. You got you don't know when you're going up. You got to be ready. You can't just be, you know, you can't even, like, go to the bathroom. Or if you smoke, you can't go have a cigarette to calm the nerves because you don't know. Like, you know.
Well, I will say on that night, Arsenio definitely did an 8.5, and you definitely did a 9.
Yeah.
So you killed it.
I tell you what.
You killed it.
But having that experience, the situation I had at Pechanga with Dylan Garcia, like, I don't – when I had to follow Arsenio that night, my mind was a lot different. Like, I was a little intimidated, obviously, because it was Arsenio Hall.
Of course.
But still. But not like I was before. I was like, okay, I gotta go in and do my thing. I got to go in and show that I belong on the same stage as he does, you know.
Did anyone give you the woo, woo, woo?
Nah,
was the Arsenio chant?
I would like that.
Like, that's the perfect Bulbitz chant, if anything.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. I wouldn't say that, like, I didn't, like, destroy, but I didn't do terrible. Like, I was able to hold my own. I felt fine about the set, but I was still, it can get pretty intimidating sometimes, especially like I said, for me, I come in the Midwest, you come out to California, and it's like all I ever knew about like what comedy was is what I saw on TV, you know,
for
like
sure.
That's the, so a lot of these experiences when I was out there were very surreal to me, and it's just like, what is this? What is happening?
Well, it's weird, 'cause at the end of the day, you know, we're all just people. Like, I don't care how much success you've had. I don't care how much minimal success you've had. We're all humans. We're all people. And it's something I try to, you know, remind myself every day. You know, I'm a humble dude. I'm not better than anyone else. But in L.A., I feel like there's a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, like idol worship, where it's like, this person's God, and I have to follow them. I have to be honest with them. And it's crazy because, you know, we tend to get in our heads and freak ourselves out about it. But then it's like, this is just another human.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure, they've achieved a lot. I really respect them. I think they're great. But just another dude, just another lady.
That's one of the, I think one of the biggest takeaways I had from being out in California, too, because you get that in your head where you're like maybe intimidated by these people, and then you have interactions with them, and then you realize you're just like, oh man, this is just a dude.
Yeah.
You know, or a dudette, or a person, or whatever you want to, however you want to
whatever your pronouns
it.
Are, whatever you're still are, part of the family.
You're part of the family. Exactly. Yeah. You're part of the family. But you realize that it's, there's nothing that, sure, they might have been on TV or whatever, but they're people. They do the same things that we do. And most of them, you know, there are a few that you run into that are just total jerks or whatever, but most of them are pretty nice. You know?
Yeah. So I think a big part of it is, you know, that kind of fraternal community that we all kind of look at comedy as, like, if you've achieved some level of success, and I'm not even talking about TV or movies or having a special, I mean, like, getting on some showcases, you know, maybe featuring, you know, maybe getting on the road a little bit, whatever you've felt, other comics have felt that. You know what I mean? Like, they know about that we're recording from a horrible hotel room right now.
Yeah.
They know about the bad, they know about sleeping in your car. They know about, you know, can I get paid not in a check because I need the cash to pay for gas to get home. Like, they understand those experiences. And for some successful ones, it may have been a minute. But in the day, we all kind of went through the weird type of just organic hazing that happens in comedy. Yep. So, you know, they get it. They're cool.
Yep, exactly. No,
and if they didn't, hey, go on the road more. Do an open mic.
Yeah, Yeah, book a gig in the middle of the country and then get here for them to cancel.
These are for all the TikTok users, right? All the oh, you're big on YouTube? We'll try to do 5 minutes. It's a different game.
Yeah, come out of here. How was your – so you got to do – you did come to Minneapolis for some shows. Unfortunately, they did get canceled. We won't go into a lot of that. But you managed to pick up some other stuff here and there, doing some mics or whatever. How was the show last night that you did?
Oh, it was wonderful. I was over at Sisyphus Brewing. Give a shout out to them. Is that how you pronounce it? Sisyphus?
I think it's, Sisyphus. That's how cool. I pronounce it. Totally wrong, too. I'm not good with words. So.
Definitely the first time I think I've said it out loud. I've just, like, read it or been like, the brewery, ever since until this moment.
Yeah, the Sisyphus Comedy Room.
It was great. The thing about Minnesota, the Twin Cities in general, is there's so much great comedy out here. There's so much. The clubs are amazing, quality acts, good indie shows. And I've heard from a lot of people when I was coming out here, a lot of other comics, like, oh, if you can, do Sisyphus Brewing because it's a good time. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been hitting them up for probably a couple years, and it hasn't really worked out. But it worked out super well yesterday. I was able to headline kind of like their amateur night.
Yep.
And What a spot. The room is like a perfect comedy room. Short ceilings. Yep. Everyone's attentive. It feels tight. The bar is right there. The laughs stay in. And I had a beautiful time. It was great. Everyone over there, the comics, the crew, everyone who staffs it. Oh man, you're all 10 out of 10. Please book me again.
Yeah,
please book me again. I will blow all the smoke up your booty for another spot.
Right. Yeah, my friend Neil he felt the same way. I have a friend that's in town from New York that was here doing the World Series of Comedy.
Hell yeah.
And he headlined the amateur hour on Thursday night.
Perfect.
And he felt the same. He was like, that room's fucking amazing. That's like one of the best comedy rooms. Like, it's like,
well, perfect. Here's the thing that kind of is the bad thing about Minneapolis. I think all y'all have so many great rooms. Sometimes I just want to bomb in a dive bar. And you can't out here. You can't bomb in any porn star bookshop basements.
Well, don't. Just need to look harder.
I will definitely look harder.
Try harder.
I will try.
There's definitely some of those around here.
Stop being so great, Minnesota, is what I'm saying. You're horrible. You're absolutely horrible. You're treating
you
me
need
too
to
much
come
niceness.
More often. You'll find it.
I can feel the sigh coming out of you like, oh, you want to see some bad shows?
Let's
show
go
you
for
the
a
way.
Trip. Yeah.
There's one in the bathroom going on right now. Mic set up. It's great. The innkeeper. The innkeeper's there. Yeah. I don't know if they're still called innkeepers, but they're there.
Oh, good times. Good times. That's for sure. Well, that's good that show went good and that you're making the best out of what, you know, kind of a negative situation, which is good because in comedy, you really do have to be positive on a lot of things to try to keep your head up because there's so many variables that we can't control, and gigs do get canceled all the time. Like,
and also,
stuff like that happens.
The biggest problem with younger comics is I think a lot of them feel like entitled. You know what I mean? Like, I was just at a mic and, or was it a mic or a club? I was somewhere and they were talking about how this guy was calling on the phone being like, when's your open mic? And I'm like, oh, it's like whatever day. And they're like, how much time do we get? 3 minutes. He's like, oh, well, I got hours of material. They're like, have you ever done stand-up? He's like, no, but I have hours. And it's like, yo, we're not entitled to headline super quickly. We're not entitled to have great shows super quickly. Like, things can go south. You know what I mean? I try not to have low expectations, but I try to have no expectations. Because if everything goes wrong, I'm still grateful I got to do, you know, a bar show on Friday. Yep. You know what I mean? I'm still grateful that I got to, you know, meet some great comics, do a podcast with a friend from a long time ago. Like, we're not entitled to anything, and we just got to work for it. We just got to work for it.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely I remember traveling. I did like a 5 or 6 hour drive for a gig. Got there, got checked into the hotel, went down to the gig. There's like nobody there, and then they end up canceling it because they, you know, it was on St. Paddy's Day, and it was a kind of an error on their part. Like they weren't thinking about when they booked the show. They didn't have a lot of forethought into the day, actually. It wasn't like they were trying to do a St. Paddy's Day. It was just like, this is the day comedy falls on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they do this monthly show. This is the day. And then it
I'm supposed to be booked tonight. It's Christmas, Eric. It's Christmas. We're not doing a Christmas show. All right, I'll be back tomorrow. We'll make it work.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a situation like that where they were just like, yeah, this is our bad.
Yeah.
So.
It happens. But. It totally happens. And I never, like... I never try to get too angry with anyone, or like I said earlier, everyone's a human. We all have our faults, you know. Things mess up, and even if you might screw me over because of an oversight or whatever, I can get mad and hate you, and we're never gonna work together again. Or, you know what? All right, that's chill. But now, since you messed up on my booking, could I get another one that's better?
Can
I headline next time? Can I get 2 dates? That'd be great instead of one.
Yeah. How about we just put 2 dates on this calendar?
Exactly. No matter how bad it gets, I'm very anti, you know, burn any bridges. There are definitely people out there who I don't work with, or people who, you know, we're still cordial, but I'm like, I don't really like
definitely
your vibe.
Not gonna,
but I'm not going to hate you and blow you up in front of everyone. You know what I mean? It is what it is, and you do your thing, I'll do mine.
That's a good attitude to have in comedy, because it's easy to get like wrapped up in all the bitterness. And
there's bitterness in comedy? What is this? News to me.
Wow, I know. You're too positive over here. You're just like an enlightened comic over here. You're just like, ooh, comedy's the greatest.
My applause break chakra is feeling very warm right now. It's feeling good.
I love it. It's interesting, too, because you made the comment about getting to see old friends, do a podcast with the old friend. We've known each other for a long time.
When did we?
I feel like we met in San Diego at maybe the San Diego Comedy Festival, maybe not. But I remember you were fairly new to act to stand up, and I think you because you used you did acting, right?
I did like, a lot of improv.
Well, maybe that's what I remember. You were very different in how you used to wear suits on stage.
Yeah, I would wear a sport coat.
You were clean shaven.
Mm-hmm.
Hair.
I had hair.
Like,
it was a different person. I killed old Eric. murdered old Eric. I'm wearing a tank top right now, having a blast. It's crazy you say that, because do you know Brian King? Dr. Brian King?
No, the name's
fun comic, there. Good guy. He was in LA for a minute. I think he's in Texas now. But I was doing some shows in, I want to say, Arizona, in Tucson. And he was in town. His partner had like some type of thing they were in town for. So she was doing that. He was hanging out with their daughter. We got coffee. And I did a show. He did a mic with someone who I did a show with earlier that week.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they were telling him about how crowd work heavy I was, and how I did a lot of crowd work. And Brian hit me up. He's like, do you do crowd work now? I'm like, yeah, I don't really think about it. But yeah, I actually kind of do talk to the crowd a lot. He's like, that's so weird, because you were used to be anti-crowd work, and you would never talk to people, and you would only do, you know, your material, and you just material. And I didn't even think about that transition, but it's true.
It's,
you know,
evolution.
What I mean? Like,
yeah,
you meet a comic, and 5 years later, they're a completely different act. They look different.
Yep.
They're talking about, they're more serious. They're more funny. They're more whatever. And it's crazy to have these memories of, you know, your friends in comedy, and then run into them 3 years later and be like, who are you? Like, this is not the person that,
like,
I thought.
What is this?
Let's get some coffee. Let's
hang
out. Yeah.
And I think it was either, I feel like we either met through that, or we met through Ryan Talmo.
Ryan Talmo is someone who I love very much, and I feel like it may or may not be that connection.
And it was either through the festival or something like that, or it was Talmo. Now that I think about it, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, maybe it was Talmo that because Talmo would always bring LA people down to San Diego, or bring San Diego people up to LA and stuff. So maybe that was our connection where we met. But
do you remember a little chain called Pat and Oscars? Pat and Oscars. Shout out to all the Pat and Oscars people I think they were very brief. They were known for a while. They were known for their bag of bread. They would give you a bag of very buttery, kind of crazy bread things. And in high school, you know, we didn't have too much cash. But there was a Pat and Oscars in my high school, and we would always sign up for the monthly, like, oh, my birthday and here, whatever email club thing, because you would get a free bag of bread.
On your birthday, we would eat the free bread.
And I went there for probably 2-3 years in high school, and the manager of that Pat and Oscars was Ryan Talmo.
So I actually
knew Ryan in a weird way when I was like 14, 15 years old. Which blows my mind that now we're like comedy buddies.
Was that in LA or was that?
That was in beautiful Torrance, California.
Okay.
At the Del Amo Mall. I think it's now the Del Amo Shopping Center. They changed the name, but it's always Del Amo in my heart.
And where is that in relationship to LA?
So if you are.
Because I'm not as familiar with all the areas.
No, you're great.
Like,
I just started dropping
LA
the names.
And San Diego.
Oh, just south of Harbor City, next to Northridge. I feel like it's probably about 30 minutes south of downtown LA. If you are in any of the beach cities, it's close to there. It's like Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach.
Gotcha. Manhattan
Beach.
Still kind of LA-ish, but like the outskirts.
Totally.
I
claim LA. I definitely don't claim Orange County. Sorry, Orange County, you're not getting the love. You're great, but I will not claim you at all. I am an LA boy.
All right.
I'm an LA man.
That's fine with me. That's crazy. That's really interesting that you kind of knew him before you even, like, when you were still in high school.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
That's so, and still, and I love stuff like that.
That's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great how I had an old classmate who we ended up reconnecting because she does comedy and she lived in LA for a while and
dabbled
a little bit out there. Now she lives back here in the Midwest and she's been doing stuff when she can on the road and, you know, doing stuff within the South Dakota scene, but it was crazy because we went to like grade school together.
I love that kind of stuff because I think comedy is its own world. You know what I mean? Like we're all kind of like, it's just its own world, and when someone's like a civilian and outside of that, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, you're still cool, you're great, or whatever, you just don't understand this. But when you meet someone as a civilian or pre-comedy, and then you both start doing comedy, it's like, whoa, we both got to the same goal but had very different journeys on the way here, and it's just, oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that's great. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But let's get into, we talked about having some fun here, but I want to hear a story of a bad show. We can't have this podcast
bad
without
show.
That.
We can't.
Or a time you felt like you bombed really bad.
I'm here's the thing. I have two stories in mind, and I don't know which one's my good one and which one's my bad one, because they're equally great and equally horrible. I'm going to do this one for my bomb one, and it was up in Oregon. I was working with a really great comic named DJ Sandu. Love him a lot. Great guy. And we're doing this show, and it was during the lockdown, and this is the hilarious thing about this tiny little town in Oregon. I want to say their area's like mandate wasn't only to go or only outdoor dining or anything like that. Everyone could live as is. You know, just wear your mask. You can go anywhere. Everything's open. But at 10 o'clock, there needs to be a shutdown. So at 10 o'clock, nothing can be open. So I want to say this is our second night. So first show, first night, you know, like maybe 20, 30 people in the crowd. Second show, sardines, full to capacity. Because everything closes down at 10, but this show was at a casino on native land who didn't have to follow the rules. So if you wanted to eat, if you wanted to drink, if you needed to get groceries, whatever you need to do, everyone in town went to this casino at 10:05. So the 10 o'clock shows were incredible. And it was the second show of Saturday, and it was a pretty big crowd, and there was this one table that was just rowdy. Super, super rowdy. I'm already a little, I wouldn't say nervous, but just kind of like, oh, this is going to be a lot of people. Let's go. I get on stage. Someone guy from that table comes up to me, pushes me while I'm on stage. I'm like, you got to go. Security, where you at? Security doesn't come. I'm like, whatever. I start doing my thing. They just start yelling at each other. Everyone at the table just yelling at each other. Everyone's looking. They're having a bad time. I go up to the table in their face with a mic being like, hey, guys, y'all got to settle down. Let's have a good time. They don't even realize I'm there. Call security again. Security doesn't come. I'm doing my act. I think I'm supposed to do like 25. I think I end up doing like less than 20. I do like 17 minutes because they're just talking. And everyone in the audience is mad. Not at me, but at them. But the anger energy is there. And I'm just like not having a good time because no one's like, this guy can't even. So I leave and DJ goes up. And one of the guys at the table pulls out a concealed carry. A guy pulls out a gun in the middle of the show, and then security came. Thanks. Good timing. Probably should have come 20 minutes earlier.
Could have avoided this.
But it was just wild because it was – there's been times before where my act, like I talk about being a millennial, like I'm fairly progressive. I believe you can believe whatever you want to believe, but that's my act and that's who I am. So sometimes after shows, people who don't agree with you, they might give you some heat or they'll be like, oh, we don't talk about it. Like, oh, here, we don't like women or black people or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But here, this was the first time I felt legitimately scared I was going to get like attacked after the show. Because security, they got him out and I like kind of walked by the doors while the headliner was up to like, I don't know, go to the bathroom or something. And they were like waiting for us outside. And it was probably the scariest show I've had.
Now, okay, so there, you said that they, that seemed like they were waiting for you outside.
Yes!
Which, when you were on stage, did you say something that upset them?
I was trying to be nice to them as much as I can. Hey, guys, settle down, quiet down. Hey,
but you didn't, like,
go.
There wasn't anything. So they were, like, having their own quarrel. It had nothing to do with you, but yet they were mad at you.
They were definitely mad at me. They were not a fan of me.
That's what I'm trying to,
whatsoever.
Like, wait a minute. In that story, there was nothing about you saying something on stage and them heckling you. It was just them fighting with each other.
Well, that's almost the point. No matter what I could have done, it was a lose-lose situation. Even if I knew how to perfectly handle them, had all the best material, had all the best comebacks and everything, everyone was just mad. The audience was just angry and mad and didn't want to be there. And I'm on stage with a mic and it's my fault.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
It was really bad.
Because you're right. You're in a no-win situation in that. There's
but I'm super glad they didn't pull the gun on me. So thanks, DJ, for taking that one. That's appreciate it. Could have been me 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. At least you got off before that happened.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It's the only way I can get off. For all you ladies listening,
yeah,
just bring a gun and yell at me.
Bring a gun. Yeah. It'll be fun. The guy, DJ lives in Las Vegas. Is that
yeah, he's
right?
A Vegas guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Beautiful
yeah.
beard.
I met him last year at the World Series of Comedy in Vegas. He was headlining some of the shows. So he had he also did like a comedy class workshop thing at the event.
Nice.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch. A lot of logistical stuff, which was pretty cool to see.
That's a thing that I feel is kind of missing, because I used to teach like stand-up workshops and improv workshops when I go on the road for a little extra money. I feel like there is some benefit to taking a stand-up workshop, but in no way is it the same benefit as like a how to get booked on the road, how to email bookers, how to get a good video, those types of skills,
kind
of type
treat
of workshop.
Comedy like a business.
It's a job. It's straight up a job.
Yep.
We're all interns right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, if you don't, especially if you're not getting booked, you are, because you're doing a lot of stuff for no money.
Exactly. So that's really exciting that he taught that kind of workshop, because that's the thing that I think a lot of comics need to hear and check out more than like how to write a joke or how to do a tag or how to do a callback. It's like, no, here's how you can get work, because you know, a rising tide raises all ships. I was gonna say a rising ship raises all tides. It's the tide ship one. Anyways,
either way,
let's all be successful. Let's all get our special. Let's all make money.
Exactly. And there's room for everybody. I have I have like the same mindset on that. I'm like, there's people that are like, you know, it is an individual thing. We're all trying to kind of go for the same thing. But I'm always like, well, yeah, but if we all help each other, we're all going to get successful. There's plenty of stuff out there for everybody. There's not like one thing that only one person can have. You know, it's where it's like, just go out, do your thing. We all have different roads and paths that are going to lead us to whatever we feel is our success. But other than that, you know, and that's, it's not a lone person. I mean, you do a lot of stuff alone, but comedy, it's all about, it's networking. Like, I hear people who talk about being self-made, and I'm like, there's no way you're ever self-made in comedy.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you book all your own shows, there's still somebody on the other end of that phone that booked that, let you book the show at that venue. There's people that came to the show that decided that they liked you and wanted to be your fan, so on and so forth. Like, there's no self-made. There's... grinding it and working hard, but you're never self-made in comedy. It takes other people.
There are so many people who, it's one of those things where it's like, if I get a good headlining weekend and can bring along a feature, I know that list of people who are not only funny and a good hang, but who've like helped me and fostered my career and gotten me shows or gave me heads up on things. There are clubs where it's like, you treated me right and you treated me great and I want to work with you, and because you're so great, I want to bring those audiences and bring my fans to your club and to your venue because, you know, you're great and you're fun.
Yeah.
Like, it is, it we're all helping each other out.
No, we absolutely. Really are.
We're all helping each other out.
Yep, but it's easy to forget that. Now, I'm curious, too. You did a
six
TED
inches.
Talk.
Oh, I thought, different
sorry.
Question. Just making
different
sure.
Question. Yeah, yep,
cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
Not curious. Already knew that. I've heard story. No. But you did a TED Talk, which is interesting. How did that come about?
So I was in graduate school. I was getting my MFA in interdisciplinary arts. My parents are very proud that I have two art degrees, no math or business skills. But I was getting my grad degree, and it had a strong focus in comedy, and I really wanted to – there were a lot of things that I was researching and like thinking about, and I was like, this would be a great TED Talk, but I don't even know how to approach that. So I kind of put some feelers out there. I had this concept of how there are things that I do as a comic and as a comedian that I think are not therapy, but like are healthy ways of viewing the world and a great way to just kind of align your perspective and be a happier person and find those happy moments and not take things so seriously and take chances. You know what I mean? Every comic, they've taken a chance because they've gone on stage at least once. You know what I mean? Like, and that's a great benefit to me and a benefit to them. So I had this kind of thing that I was working on, shopped out to a couple places, and then coincidentally enough, someone who's actually in my grad program, who was teaching over at in Helena, Montana, they were actually running a TED Talk series. So I was searching everywhere to see where I can get it, and the next thing you know, they like almost offered it. And I was like,
wow,
I didn't even ask,
awesome.
Thank you. This is the universe is aligned.
Me? That's amazing.
That happens all the time with shows, I feel like. You like submit to clubs, you submit to shows, you don't get on, you're trying your best, and then in your lap falls like, hey, do you want like a $500 one-nighter? And you're like, yes, that'd be, thank you. I didn't realize.
Yeah, please.
So that almost happened in a TED Talk way for me. I'm really grateful for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so did you end up, where did you do it then? Did you do it
at
in Montana?
Carroll College, Helena, Montana.
So it was in Montana.
It
oh,
was.
That's amazing. That's
and
awesome.
It was, I want to say, March 14, 15. It was the TED Talk shoot date was the exact same day as the COVID hitting Montana sweep.
Oh.
So we sold 200 sold out tickets to see this TED Talk and had to refund them the day of. And I had to do my TED Talk for no one. Well, for two camera guys who were delightful. But it was crazy because, just like we're talking about, you roll with the punches. We're not entitled to a big crowd. It just happens. Yeah. So if you check out my TED Talk, I'd appreciate it. But if you hear no audience vocalization, it's not because I'm bombing. It's kind of because I'm bombing. But it's also because no one's there.
It's because you did a film TED Talk versus a live audience.
I did it for The Art of Bombing. You know, I specifically did my TED Talk for this podcast preparation.
That's something I've actually thought about, putting something together about trying to do a TED Talk myself regarding failure, finding success through failure, because that's the whole concept of this podcast. You know, we talk about the bombing and stuff, but it's really trying to learn from our mistakes to become better people.
Totally.
Because
life is perspective. That's all life is, you know what I mean? And I feel like if you don't feel failure, or if you haven't, you know, been in those valleys, you can still be happy, you can still achieve success, but you're that much more grateful when it's like, yo, I'm headlining this weekend over here, and last week I was bombing in a basement. You know what I mean? Like, the come up
just
feels better.
And there are a lot of
highs
and lows of that in comedy. Yeah. You know, people are on TV, and then the next day they're at their regular day job. You know what I mean? Like, they get a late night spot, and then the next day they have to go to their job.
I don't want to say his name, but there's a comic who was on the first season of an extremely, extremely successful TV show. He didn't think it was going anywhere, so he left. And then second season, it just exploded. He would have been a millionaire, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I do it from time to time, a lot of times from time. Now he drives for Uber, drives for Lyfts, you know, does the Postmates thing or whatever. And it's always one of those things where I'm like, oh my God, what if you get recognized? Like, what's
I
that
think that
be
about
weird?
That?
What's that
like,
oh.
To me now, that just, if you have guaranteed money.
Yeah.
Whether you think a show is going to go anywhere or not. Like, if I got booked to do a TV show, and I didn't think, unless it was, like, going against, like, my, you know, my point, my worldly views or
for
some
sure.
moral compass that was getting validated. Mm. But if it was
Cinemax
just like,
presents
yeah,
Dan you know, and Debbie
like
do
I said,
Dan.
Moral compass, not that. Cinemax, my number is. Can email me. Go to the artofbombingpod.com. And there's the email.
Beautiful.
But aside from that, like if I got to be on a TV show, despite where I felt like it was going, if it's guaranteed money,
yeah,
like I don't think I would give that. I just do. I would ride it out until they're like, oh yeah, we're canceled,
for
and
sure.
then be like, okay, because you don't. You're right. You don't know if something's gonna blow up or not. Because
exactly.
a lot of times,
anything can pop.
Most TV shows don't pop at the first season.
Oh, for sure.
That like first season is just to see whether or not you can do another season.
I almost want to get to the point where I'm successful enough to where I still get to do Lyft and Uber, but then get recognized from the passengers. You know what I mean? Like, oh, did you win Survivor? That was me. So where are you going? You know what I mean? That'd be wonderful.
And then you're actually recording it, and it's like your new TV show.
Yeah, and then it's just the
Lyft with.
I hear a pitch. Let's sell it to Adult Swim right now.
Let's do it. I love it. This is great. All
so
right,
Dan
well,
and Eric's iPhone.
I got some standard stuff I like to talk about because you talked about the you know highs and lows in comedy and the bumming and bombing, the dreadful feeling you get when you bomb or have a bad show. How does that affect you and how has it changed over the years? And
I feel like I used to take bombs, not hard, but they would bug me. But I feel more weight now. You know what I mean? I definitely feel more weight when the bomb happens. Because if I don't do well at an open mic, you know, my first couple of years or at a show, I'm not supposed to. We all have a bad first couple of years before we even start figuring out what's going on. I think now I take the bombs maybe a little harder just because I'm at a level in my career where those bombs now mean more. You know what I mean? So it's my mm-hmm. first time, you know, featuring or headlining for a club. I want to make sure they're getting solid shows. They like me. They bring me back. If I were to bomb one of those and they don't like me and they don't bring me back, like that's like a very anxiety-filled paranoia that I think about all the time. I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like a job. You know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
I'm getting paid to do my job and I want to do my job well. And if I don't do my job well, I might get fired. And that scary feeling of getting fired freaks me out a lot. So that's what I feel when I'm, like, in the bomb mindset.
Yep. No, that's totally makes sense. When a joke – when you're on stage, though,
mm-hmm.
and you say you're telling a joke and it doesn't hit or you feel like you're losing the crowd, what goes through your mind at that moment?
I have a lot of tricks that I use. I have a lot of, like, callbacky things and, like, crowd-working things in my back pocket to where it's, like, if this tanks, I know I can bring this back up and at least get them in the mindset, like – I have this thing that I do. Don't steal it. If you steal it, I'm going to find you and murder you. But it's almost like a Pavlovian thing where I'll point out something that an audience member is doing and I'll be like, oh, this is a funny thing they do every time they laugh, or a funny thing they do if instead of laughing, they do this. And every time a joke, I'll comment on it from my first couple of jokes that I know work. And then if something doesn't work, I'll call back to them. So they've already been trained in the first minute or two. They're like, oh, we're always laughing every time Eric calls this out. So if something bombs, I can be like, at least it got a weird smile, or at least it got a guffaw, and that'll bring him back. So I feel like when I'm in there and I'm in like kind of my brain and, you know, something's not working, it's more just like, all right, what do I have in my wheelhouse where I can get him back? But at the same token, like, I'm sure you've been there. You would rather have – well, I guess I would rather have – why am I speaking for you? I would rather have – a set where I bomb halfway through and get them back.
Oh, yeah.
Then just do well. You know what I mean? Because I feel like it's almost kind of an ego thing. Like it comes back to the the testament of your work. And it's like, I can actually get them back when they don't want me. And that's more powerful than just keeping them happy for 20 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, sometimes for me, I'm like, well, if I'm not like getting paid, I want to make sure the whole show's good. And
exactly.
Like, but like,
exactly.
There's like times, because one of my favorite things to do is go to like a mixed open mic where yeah. a lot of times the crowd comes in because there's music and they could care less about comedy. And then you go up as a comic and you bring them in. They start listening to comedy.
Yeah.
And that to me, that's what exactly what you're talking
it's
about.
Magical.
It's like, yep, I did it. I am good at this job sometimes.
Sometimes. Please book me. Please book
yeah,
us.
Please book me. Yes.
Yeah. D&E Comedy Hour available until the end of the year.
What do you do to analyze sets when they don't go well or a joke doesn't work? What's kind of your process to improve? Now, it seems like you said you had a lot of improv training, so obviously that probably helps with performing too, you know, because when things aren't going whatever way, you can do crowd work and whatever, but...
Somewhat. I feel it's weird because improv training, I definitely wouldn't say... Yeah, in a weird way, it didn't hurt or help me as a comic because it's like a kind of a different part of your brain. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's very reliant on what other people are doing. Where stand-up is like, oh, I'm just here. Hello. I feel like I like to play – I like to keep jokes fresh for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, I'm trying to think of one of my bits now. Like I have a joke where I say – oh, you may have seen me on Last Comic Standing or Comedy Central or Craigslist. Now, the past couple months, that joke has been, you may have seen me on Last Comic Standing, Comedy Central, or OnlyFans. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I do that kind of stuff a lot where it's like I'll take old jokes and then I'll just like switch it up, try to make it a little more... I have another joke about how I don't look like a tough cholo. I look like a cholo who loves like hummus and early Blink-182. And depending where
that's
I am,
very accurate.
Instead of Blink-182, I might say My Chemical Romance.
Yeah,
if it's an older crowd, I'll say like smooth jazz or Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. So I think like whenever jokes don't work for me, that's more of an opportunity to be like, all right, did something in that not was something in that not relatable enough, and how can I make it more relatable? Or if it's something that worked a million times in the past and it didn't work this one time, why didn't it work that one time? Was it them? It's usually me, but was it just them? You know what I mean? Was there a trigger word in it? Like I used to have this bit where I used the word gay. And I feel like every time I would say it, and it wasn't like mean towards gay people. I'm wearing a pride shirt.
That's true. He is wearing a pride shirt. That's not a lie.
It wasn't anti-gay people. It wasn't against the LGBT community, but I just said the word gay. If anything, it celebrated the community. When people hear gay, they automatically are a little triggered. Or mm-hmm. they automatically go, same with the word black. You know what I mean? Like, if you say black, people are like, whoa.
A lot of trigger words now.
So it's one of those things where it's like, maybe I just said something where it just didn't, you know, they just heard something and it triggered them in the wrong way. So now I'll say, you know, like, the LGBT people, or you know what I mean? Or
mm-hmm.
I'll try to say African American because I feel like that feels so forced. But I'll be like my black neighbor, you know. Just keep not as aggressive.
Which, no, I mean, and that makes sense to kind of do that, you know, because I feel like when a joke doesn't land, a lot of times it's one of two things: it either wasn't relatable or it was too smart.
Yeah,
where it went over the crowd's head because you know a lot of comedy crowds don't come to think; they just want to be
let loose.
They just want to come and be entertained, and they don't want to like have to think about the joke. You know?
That's my Bumble bio. I want to come, be entertained, and not think about the joke. I just want to.
How's that doing for you?
Great. Seeing a wonderful lady now. I like her a lot.
Right,
thanks
cool.
for putting up with me, babe. You're wonderful.
That's awesome. It worked out for you. That's good. That's good.
No, she's a ray of sunshine.
And then another thing I wanted to bring up because I'm. I haven't done this in a while, or whatever. But you're a wrestler too, or were?
I used to train to wrestle.
Oh, okay. Did you ever wrestle?
I had a couple matches. They were fun. They were great. But I think why so many comedians like wrestling is because wrestling is what we do times a billion.
Yeah.
Because if I have a bad set, I cry in the shower with my PBR at night. If you have a bad set as a wrestler, you die. You break your neck and you die.
Yeah.
And that's a bad set. That's a bad set.
Yeah, it's definitely
set.
A bad set when you go home with something broken.
Exactly. And like if I do a crowd, you know, that's like 200-300 deep and I kill it, oh man, you know that feeling. You can't sleep that night, you feel amazing. Mm-hmm. These wrestlers are getting in front of like 10,000 people a night, and it's like, wow, I wish I could I'm going to do this open mic real quick.
Yeah, even like some of the like independent shows, and there's only like 50 to 100 people, or the energy is just unreal.
I think the thing that's the most beautiful about comedy, and I think the reason why comedy works, is because at the end of the day, you're creating a relationship with someone. Mm-hmm. Like we don't want relationships. We need them. We need to feel connected with other people. And I feel like when you're on the same vibe as a crowd, and they get you, and they know what you're thinking, and they like you, it feels amazing. But you get that response and you understand them approving you by their laughter. But in wrestling, it's chants and it's like hugging people. It's like, like when you have 10,000 people chanting for the bad guy or booing the bad guy and, you know, loving the baby face. Oh, I can only imagine what that feels like. Right. That is just straight adrenaline. Like just everyone on the same page, like loving it, getting it. That's for me, wrestling is like the ultimate version of community.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I was fortunate enough. I have a friend that wrestles. And when I lived in San Diego, he actually had his own little kind of his wrestling franchise or company, independent company. And he put on shows at a bar or whatever. And I did like heel manager. I was like a heel manager.
Oh, hell yeah.
And
what was your name?
I went by a Dirty Dan.
Oh, Dirty Dan's good.
Yeah, Dirty Dan. I
thought you were going to say like Bad Bulb or something.
No, Dirty Dan was the persona. And but I remember we did he did this show. He did this Halloween show, wrestling show, where like the wrestlers would take their persona and mash it with like a famous wrestler's persona for Halloween.
Oh,
so,
that's
like,
cool. Ultimate luchador warrior.
Exactly, yeah, that kind of thing. And so since I was Womankind. A manager, I did, I was like the Dirty Bear, Paul Bear.
Oh, Paul Bear.
So I mashed it up, and I went all out on this costume as Paul Bear, but I had to do a promo that night.
Did you do the voice, or did I?
I did the voice, but then eventually I broke character. But I couldn't hold it. I tried.
I tried to commit to the bit, Dan.
I tried. I'm not good at keeping voices. That's something I got to work on. But that was fun. But I remember the first promo I had to do, even not in that character, and I just like the adrenaline from that crowd was insane because it was like the first time me and my wrestler were doing a promo, and he was like, all right, so you just go out and you introduce us, you know, just say something quick and then hand me the mic. I'll take it from there. And I went out there and just crushed as a heel manager. The crowd hated me. I started a famous baseball player from the Padres had died or something, and I just went out and just started making fun.
Oh my God.
I was relentless. I'm just like, oh,
people
yeah,
love blah. To hate when heels hate on sports.
And so I just like made fun of that and like just they hated me. And I just I finished my thing. I hand the mic over to my wrestler. He says like one thing, and then he's like, and we go to the back, and he's like, holy shit, I didn't need them. I couldn't follow. I was like,
well, you're the manager. You're Dirty Dan, baby.
He's like, you knew what you were doing. And that was, and it was amazing. It was so much fun.
I could only imagine. I would love to be, here's the thing. I would love to be a heel manager, but I think I would end up being like a face manager. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I want to pump up the good guy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because if I was ever to be in your shoes, I would love it and then feel super guilty afterwards. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you. You're a nice lady. Oh, sir. What? Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like it would hurt. I don't think I have the gumption for it.
Yeah. I think one thing that helped me is a lot of our friends came to it that were also like in improv and comedy. So it wasn't like they would like yell at me and they would chant negative things. And a lot of times they're the ones that started it. So it wasn't like,
for sure.
So I think that helped because it was like, oh, in my head, I'm not necessarily being mean to some random person I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm interacting kind of with some of these people that I do know. Granted, there were strangers there, and I wouldn't, you know, get in their faces or whatever if I had to do whatever. But it felt more like, it was an act. It was, you're having fun. It was like part of the show. That's how it was. So it wasn't like I felt guilty that I was mean to some person. No, and they love it.
They love it, especially the
random people you don't know, when you get them involved and if they shout something at you and you get in their face as the heel, That's what they're there for. They're, that makes their night. They're like, yes.
So I have a question for you. You said that when you're doing wrestling, you are playing that character. Do you feel that applies to comedy? Do you feel like when you're on stage, are you playing a heightened version of yourself that is a character, just a heightened version of yourself, or just are you just a character on stage?
Well, I think there are people who play characters on stage, obviously.
Yeah, we all hate those people. You guys are the worst. Exactly.
Yeah. For me, I think I'm just playing it's me, but more animated what's the word I want to use?
Multiply.
It's like, yeah.
Exponential.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a more... Yeah, it's me, but it's like a different me. Like it's a heightened me, but
sure.
It's still my persona. Like in a lot of ways, because a lot
that.
Of how I
like
act on stage, or you know, like just my demeanor and whatever, I'm like that in a lot of situations off stage when I'm with like friends and stuff like that. You know,
totally
different. You know, depending on the different situations, you know, I dress differently when I'm on stage than I do
as do
off
I.
Stage.
I think we all kind of do because
yeah.
Shorts aren't allowed.
Well, a lot of people wear shorts now. So after the pandemic, people are like, I don't care. I'm doing what I want.
That's what I've noticed actually since the pandemic. Like, because we had a lot of park shows, a lot of outdoor mics, stuff like that. People are getting fast and loose with the shorts and sandals rule. I'm not against it.
I'm like, whatever.
I'm not
I don't
against
care.
It at all.
You know,
yeah.
I used to be that comic that was like, oh, you can't do all this.
Same.
And now I'm like, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
What do I care if somebody's wearing shorts and sandals on stage and doing that? It doesn't affect me.
It doesn't. It
has
really
nothing
doesn't.
To do with me. I'm still going to go do what I'm going to do, and that's fine. You know,
yeah.
Like, it has no bearing on what I'm doing.
I would say the bigger thing is people don't want to disrespect or dishonor the craft of comedy. And I'm like, all right, well, instead of shitting on this person about the way they dress, maybe you should tell them, hey, wear pants just because looking out. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Build them
yeah.
up instead
build
of having these new comics be like, I thought sandals were okay. You
instead
know what
of
I mean?
Instead of scolding them and making them feel like crap,
yeah,
be like, hey,
up.
You know, maybe you should, you know, you might be taken a little more serious if you're wearing pants.
A rising know? Boat raises all... Awkwafina.
Yes, it does. All right, we're gonna wrap up here. I like
Beautiful.
To. One of the things I like to ask at the end, I have a Art of Bombing Spotify playlist that is a comedy get pumped, and it doesn't have to be a song that gets you pumped to do comedy, but just a song that gets you pumped to do whatever. Do you have a song that you would like added to the playlist?
Yes. Every time I go on the road, I love doing comedy. But what I might love just as much, maybe even a tad bit more, is after the show ends, I'll go on my phone, look up karaoke bars near me, go do some karaoke, and sing Super Bass by Nicki Minaj.
Ah.
So Super Bass by Nicki Minaj will be added to the playlist. It gets me pumped. It's my karaoke go-to. And you know what? You can watch me bomb on stage in comedy or watch me not bomb doing that song. But that is my addition.
But whatever you do, don't watch him on.
I can see your voice.
I can see your voice.
Don't watch him on the show that we're telling
about
you
the
about.
Yeah,
over and over again.
And then, what's been one of your favorite shows that you've done so far in your career?
Ooh, one of my favorite shows I've done so far in my career. This was I had one in mind. It's a little bomby, but I think I'm just gonna go with probably 6 or 7 months into it. I didn't do that well, but it was my first time working a bigger club, and it was my first time just being in front of an audience that was more than like 20, 30 people. It was over the Comedy Store in the main room, and I really just did okay. But that night, I remember feeling so like powerful. I just felt like God, like walked outside, like chain smoked a pack of cigarettes. I'm like, this is what comedy is. And yeah, like I said, not by any means not the best show I've ever done, probably not the biggest show I've ever done, not even the coolest show I've ever done, but that was the one that got me hooked.
Where it's like, okay, I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do.
100%.
That's beautiful. All right, well, this
You're
has been
beautiful.
Great.
This podcast is beautiful. Jeez Louise.
Where can people find you online? Where do you want to direct people to for social media?
Check out that TED Talk. Just look up Eric Escobar TED Talk. You'll find it. You can also find me at Instagram, on Instagram, by Instagram, around Instagram, at Eric Escobar. That is E-R-I-K-E-S-C-O-B-A-R. I have a bunch of shows on the road for the next couple months. Would love to see you if you came out. Definitely tell me you heard me on The Art of Bombing so we can bond and talk about how much we love Dan.
Beautiful. Thank you. This has been great.
Great.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.